أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم. I'm your host Nabil Awan. This is a topical discussion program that addresses the issues that matter to you. Brothers and sisters, I welcome you to the new dawn. Today's discussion is about two topics which everyone has an opinion on, not just the theologians and the academics. We consider the most important concepts in current day Islam, concepts which shape the future of Islam in the modern day. The title of this discussion is Tomorrow's Islam, Modernity versus Ijtihad. Inshallah, the answers from our guest will give us a glimpse into the future sustainability of Islam as we know it and as God intended it to be. To discuss these important topics, we have with us Sayyid Ali Radha Rizvi. He is a scholar that has spent his life studying both in the secular and Islamic institutions. He is well known for keeping up with current issues, both social and political. We welcome you to the studio, Sayyid. Hope you had a safe journey up.
Thank you.
Before we start today's discussion, I would just like to define modernity. In the Cambridge Dictionary, modernity is defined as the condition that results from being modern. Now, when we look at this word and its meaning, and when it's used alongside the Islamic opinion, we get two different viewpoints from the average person. The first is that people argue that Islam embraces modernity. And when they say this, they usually mean that Islam embraces modern science and technology. And then you have a second set of people who say that Islam is against modernity, meaning that it is reluctant and unwilling to change its practices, its beliefs to fit a more modern time. And in this discussion, we'll be focusing more on the later of the two definitions. Definition in mind, Sayyid, could I ask you to define ijtihad and its roles in both the school of the Ahlul Sunnah and the school of the Shias?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The word ijtihad itself in Islamic terminology has been taken from the word juhd, which is to strive, to work towards something, to struggle. And that's where the word jihad has also been taken. In Arabic, the different formulas change the meaning completely when you take it to different bab in sarf, in the grammar. Then the meaning changes. And it's from Babi Ifti'al, Ijtihad. In our Sunni brothers, to strive to give your own view. Personal view is called Ijtihad. In the Shia, in that definition, Ijtihad is haram. Personal understanding of something in comparison to Nas, which is Quran and Hadith. And that's where Sayyid Sharifuddin Musawi's book, An-Nas over Ijtihad, comes in. So Nas is Quran and Hadith, and Ijtihad is personal understanding. So say, Quran says this, but I say this. Hadith says this, but I say this. This is haram, according to our definition. In the Shias, the definition given to the word Ijtihad, and that we use presently, is given by Muhaqqiq-e Hilli. Shaykh Baqir al-Sadr has argued in his halaqat of Usul al-Fiqh, when he goes into the word Ijtihad, that if you look at the early definitions of all the usuli ulama, like Shaykh Mufid, Sayyid Murtada, Shaykh Tusi, all of these fuqaha, they would say that ijtihad is not from the Shia, meaning personal view is not with the first definition that I've given. So from that view, for example, you would come across many traditions that the Sahaba have come to the first caliph and said, one of your appointees has committed this sin. He says, ijtahada fa akhta. He did his personal understanding, he carried out his personal ijtihad, and he made a mistake. With that definition, all of our fuqaha have condemned it. But Muhaqqiq Hilli said, because the word itself is not bad, just like jihad. There are two definitions. What Taliban are doing, they say we are doing jihad, and what Quran has said jihad to be jihad. The definitions of Quran are more important for us. Today we have a very distorted definition of jihad. Likewise, we have a very distorted definition of ijtihad. The word itself is from juhud, which is a very positive term. And ijtihad is to strive and to struggle to understand the Quran and Sunnah better. That is our definition.
Okay, thank you. Now, if I may, we'll start the discussion by talking about the relationship or perceived relationship between Islam and modern society. We find that Islam is perceived as being very backwards with its views on women, homosexuality and the like. For example, as you mentioned, the Taliban, when they were in control of Afghanistan, they would not allow women to go to schools or have jobs. So my second question to you is that why is Islam so at odds with modern society, especially in the topics that I've just mentioned?
Again, a very good question. Islam itself says that modernity, yes, the new things that come, the experts on Islam, the fuqaha, the experts and the jurists, they will come and define for you what Islam says on these new topics. However, the Sharia itself is complete, because in the Quran it says, "Al-yawma akmaltu lakum dinakum wa atmamtu alaykum ni'mati." Today we have completed your religion for you. So there will not be any changes. With that definition, the biggest problem with Christianity, unlike Judaism, was that they started modernizing things, and now they're regretting, because according to sociology, if you look into the Western society, they have modernized most of the teachings, and therefore the church is now finishing and all of that. Now, we have our own definitions of ijtihad, and with that definition, the topics that you have touched, the Holy Prophet has legislated. This kind of ijtihad will be against the Quran and Sunnah. This will not be, striving to understand the Quran and Sunnah better, but this will be to strive to go against the Quran and Sunnah. The Quran has openly declared homosexuality to be haram. So the Islamic jurists will not tolerate that. There will be certain topics, yes, with time, there will be changes. But most of the topics, or many of the topics, there will not be changes. For example, Islam says cleaning your teeth is important, but not necessarily with a branch of the tree. So the fuqaha will come, a brush is permissible. This is from usul al-fiqh. Ijtihad is done here. The emphasis in the traditions is to cleaning the teeth and not just using the branch. So you can use a brush and toothpaste and there'll be no problem. So on all the modern issues, there'll be tolerance, but on all the issues that were present in the time of the Holy Prophet, there'll be no tolerance because Islam has already defined those.
Okay. So in the time of the Prophet, there was no concept of ijtihad. Rather, people would, interpret the Quran and Hadith themselves as well as seek guidance from the Prophet. Could we say that ijtihad is an innovation and not part of Islam?
Compared to the Sunnis, where Islam, the time of legislation or the tashri' as they call in Arabic, as they say in Arabic, tashri', the time of tashri', meaning where the Sharia was being laid, is 22 years. But in the Shias, it is not just 22 years. Because we believe the time of all the infallibles is the time of legislation, tashri'. So the 22 years of the Holy Prophet, the 30 years of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and all the Imams until the Ghaibate Sughra, the beginning, 260 age. So it is 270 years. So our time of tashri' is much longer. Whenever there were new issues, the Imams addressed them. So ijtihad is not something that that is an innovation in our time. In the time of the fifth and the sixth Imam, the Imams were training the students and they would say, ijlis fil masjid. For example, the sixth Imam al-Islam said to Hamran ibn A'yun, Zurara and Hamran, they were two brothers. The fifth Imam, they were students of the fifth Imam alayhi salam. So he said, ijlis fil masjid waftil al-nas. Sit down in the masjid and give fatwas to the people. We have given you the kulliyat, we have given you the general rules. You can derive the juziyat, the partial rules from those. Alayna, you know, like the term used by the Imams alayhi salam. Alayna bil usul wa alaykum bil tafarru. We will give you the usul, we will give you the principles, and you derive from those the branches of those principles. So you will make certain rules, you know, you will make the juziyat or the partial rules that will apply. So it is not an innovation. Because if it was, if you would define it as an innovation, then at the time of the Imams, they allowed their students to do ijtihad, and they appointed them to do ijtihad. That when I'm not present, these are the rules that I'm giving you. But they did not allow all of their students. For example, they said to Hisham ibn Hakam, who was an expert on theology or on imamat, he said, "You're an expert on theology. You defend my imamat, the imamat of our forefathers. I love you very much. I respect you very much. I honor you." He was only 18 when the imam would stand up for him and give him his abba. But he said, "Do not enter fiqh because you are only an expert in theology." And likewise, the ones who were expert in fiqh, he said, "Do not enter those other parts." For example, like the history and the disputes between the different religions, because you are not an expert on those. So it is a specialization that the imams were giving, you know. So that concept existed.
Okay. So, I mean, there are people that would argue that they can do that job themselves. You know, they can interpret the Quran and Hadith themselves. They have that knowledge. In your opinion, is interpreting the Quran and Hadith still a viable option in modern day?
I can see that you have prepared your topic well. You see, we say that the Quran itself can only be interpreted by the Holy Prophet and his holy progeny. We cannot define and give explanations to the Holy Quran, especially the ta'wil is only with the Ahlul Bayt. And tafsir, you know, tafsir birra' is haram. You can only do tafsir based on the understandings that the Imams have given you. Now, when the ulama and the fuqaha, our mufassir, you know, the great scholars, they do interpretation, they keep in mind all of the explanations by the Imams, alayhimus salam, and then they give it further explanation, and they build onto the explanations that the Imams have given, or the Holy Prophet. So you will find traditions on the ayat, the verses, from the Holy Prophet and the Imams, and you will build onto that. Now, not any Tom, Dick and Harry can stand up and say that I can interpret the Holy Quran and I understand the Hadith. There are many examples. For example, today, in this day and age, there is this tradition that people are misinterpreting by the 12th Imam, the Tawqi Mubarak. It says, Al-Khumsu Mubahun Lishi'atina. The Khums itself is Mubah, is permissible for our Shias. Now, there are some scholars who have gone on to, well, I wouldn't call them scholars, but some so-called scholars have gone on to say that the khums itself is not wajib because the imam is saying mubah. You can use it yourself, you don't need to take it out in my absence. Now, the first logical answer to that is the time of the imams was 260 years, 270 years, and after that we have had over 1100 years. So are you trying to say that the sharia only came for those 260 years and it is now put in a masjid, left waiting for the 12th Imam al-Islam to come and implement? It will not be implemented in the absence of the Imam al-Islam. So that is a logical answer. Secondly, when you go to the experts, the jurists, the fuqaha, they interpret this tawqi' or this hadith of the 12th Imam al-Islam. Today there is a banking system. In that time, the banking system was, you know, there were no notes. You would have, the currency was the gold coins and the silver. Silver and gold was, you know, the currency of the time. Dinar and dirham. Dinar was a gold coin, silver coins were dirham. So the people would gather the gold and silver, dig a hole in the ground and bury it. And that's why you still get treasures. That was the banking system in olden times. Not just in the Islamic world, in the world. In all medieval times, that's what their banking was. They would hide their treasure so no one else can find it, and they would. Many people died burying their treasures. Then the 12th Imam Islam said, no, the khums is permissible for our Shias, meaning not that the khums is waived. It is permissible, meaning the fuqaha can use it on the affairs of the Shias. You don't need to bury it for me for the next 1,000 years, 1,100 years. It can be used to maintain the things that the Shias need it for. And there was, till a few centuries, people were just still burning it, and then Allama Hilli and the other Fuqaha said, it is not permissible to just, you know, dig a hole and put your khums inside the ground. So that is called ijtihad. Understanding the Quran and Hadith properly. Not defining your own things, but you must give a proof from the Holy Quran and the Hadith or logic. So ijtihad is based on three things. So the Quran, Sunnah, and an Aql. The Quran, Sunnah is the words of an infallible, their actions and their approvals, and Aql, logic. So you would define, and these experts will give rulings according to them.
So the critics of ijtihad and the concept of taqlid always seem to fall on the one point of aql and say, because we have a flawed logic and a flawed understanding, surely we can't refer to that. What is your opinion on that?
Okay, now what do you define aql as? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given you wisdom, and he says, you know, مَالَكُمْ كَيْفَ تَحْكُمُونَ, you know, the Holy Quran continuously says, why don't you use your intellect? Now, is that defined as qiyas, assumptions, or in logic, when you go, there'll be induction, deduction, and then there is qiyas, or not in logic, but, you know, in usul fiqh, you call it qiyas, or in logic, you'll call it tamthil. Tamthil, which is the qiyas of usul al-fiqh, which is haram in the Shias. Assumptions. You cannot just suppose anything. And you define it as a practice of Imam Abu Hanifa. You cannot use your personal judgments. That is haram. Now, the word aql, when you say, not just the aql of common layman. Experts will come and make rules based on logic. These are called usul fiqh. And they are very logical. They will make sense to anyone who is an intellectual. And wherever there is no ruling on something, for example, smoking was not did not exist in the time of the Holy Prophet and the Imams. So now the fuqaha do not have anything in the Quran, do not have anything in the Hadith on it. So they will come and define it based on Quran and Hadith. They may use the qaidatul la dharar, you know, there are qawaid fiqhiyah, la dharar wa la dharar fil Islam. You cannot harm yourself or others in Islam, the Holy Prophet said. Now, so they say it is harmful. If it is harmful, anything which is harmful, and it is a serious harm, then it is haram. If it is not harmful, then it is not haram. So you will have general rules on based on which the fuqaha will come out. It is not as simple, I'm just simplifying the whole thing.
Yeah.
So they will come and use those and give logical basis of their understanding on the new rulings, on medical things, on economics, on banking, on everything which did not exist in the Quran and Hadith. The Quran only, for example, says, أَحَلَّ اللَّهُ الْبَيْءَ وَحَرَّمَ الرِّبَى. As brief as that. Allah has made buying and selling transactions halal for you, and He has made the interest haram. Now the Hadith will come and explain it further. The Fuqaha will expand on to that. Hadith says, yes, even buying and selling at many places is haram, and interest in some places is halal. So they will come in and expand onto that.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Sayyid. We're now going to cut to a short nasheed.
Ali. Farooq. Qariyaz. Mustafa. Fatahi. Amin. Fayyaz. و هنرمند خودسار محمد اینوزاه زاده تنظیم از آرمین نصرتی.
یتیما با ظرفشین ساکت تن و سر بزین قم رو شونه هاشون عشق چشماشون روی گونه هاشون ناله می کند از غم باباشون عشق چشماشون روی گونه هاشون ناله می کند از غم باباشون. اون که شب می اومد تک و تنها، روی شونش نون و خرما، حالا فهمیدن که کی بوده. اون که شبها با حال خسته می اومد با روی بسته، حالا فهمیدن علی بوده.
اون که شب می اومد تک و تنها، روی شونش نون و خورما، حالا فهمیدن که کی بوده. اون که شب خواب حال خسته می اومد با روی بسته، حالا
دل خرابه، چشمای گرسنه به راه بابا، از کسی به جز او غذا نمیخوام. چشمای گرسنه به راه بابا، از کسی به جز او غذا نمیخوام. وجودش از دنیا سیرم، برای بابا میمیرم، همه سراغشو میگیرم. خرابه ها تاریک و سرده، بابا دیگه بر نمیکرده، همه سراغشو میگیرم.
بی وجودش از دنیا سیرن، برای بابا میمیرن، همه سراغشو میگیرن. خرابه ها تاریک و سرده، بابا دیگه بر نمیگرده، همه سراغشو
شده پر امید. شب وصالم رسید، شب شب مراده، انقدر نکن گریه دختر من، عشق شوق تو چشمای تر من، انقدر نکن گریه دختر من، عشق شوق تو چشمای تر من. فاطمه میاد دنبال من، خبر داره از حال من، امشب میاد به استقبالم، به انتظارش بیدارم کنار این کوله بارم، درد دلای چندین سالم.
از حال من عشق میاد دست بالا به انتظارش بیدارم کنار این کوله بارم درد دلای چندین سالم
Welcome back. In the studio, we're discussing modernity versus ijtihad and how Islam will shape up tomorrow. With me in the studio is Sayyid Ali Raza Rizvi, helping me to discuss these topics. Sayyid, before we went to the break, we were discussing the concept of ijtihad and those that are, in fact, opposed to it. In the current day, where the trials and troubles are so very different to what they were at the start of Islam, our options seem to be very limited. On one hand, we have those that say anything that is, you know, later than 1400 years old is an innovation and we can't do it and it's haram. And then on the other side, we have the ultra-reformists who are saying that everything in Islam must change, it must modernize to the current society. And
they only
remain Muslim by name. With this being the case, do you think that ijtihad is the solution?
Ijtihad has always been the solution in the definition that the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, the school of Ahlul Bayt, has given. And ijtihad with that definition would mean that you truly understand the spirit of Islam, the ruh that the Holy Prophet gave. What would the Holy Prophet do in the situation that we are in? What would the Imams alayhi wasalam do in the situation that we are in? Not trying to say that, okay, what was the situation at the time? And you just take back the people to the time of the Holy Prophet and the Imams. I will just say one sentence. When a person said to, you know, Khomeini that by this revolution you have taken back Iran 300 years and it is not modern anymore, and he was fighting and arguing with him. He said, you're only saying that I've taken back Iran 300 years? I wanted to take it back 1400 years to the time of the Holy Prophet and the Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam. In the true form that you try and live the life of the Holy Prophet today. You try and live the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam today. That's what you have to try and adapt in your life. What would the Holy Prophet do? Would he still use that branch or would he brush? He would brush today if he was present in this day and age. The concept of Islam is you know, like cleanliness and all the different, you know, the Holy Prophet forbade even the the muslah of the non-Muslims. You know, you cannot even cut the parts of a deceased Muslim. You can't cut them into pieces. If a Muslim is doing it today in the name of Islam, then he has not understood the Holy Prophet. So ijtihad is the definition that says that try and understand Quran and Hadith in its true form. And if you did, you would be in the time of the Holy Prophet, even if you're today. When a person said to Imam Ali al-Islam that my brother would have been with you if he had been alive. He said, where is he? Why didn't he come? He said, he's dead. He said, would he attend if he was here? If he was alive, he said, yes, he would surely be with you. He said, not only your brother, but all the ones who are only in the wombs and in the lineage of the people that are present here. After centuries to come, they're all with me because their hearts are with me. So the Holy Prophet, you know, is present. You should imagine yourself to be in the presence of the Holy Prophet.
Thank you for that. You say that ijtihad is the solution that can tackle the modern day problems and it will give us solid information on how we can live our lives here within the West or wherever we are while still maintaining our Islamic identity and still staying within the boundaries of Islam. But at the same time, we have people who claim to be jurists from very established organizations, for example, like Al-Azhar University, they released a fatwa saying if a woman wished to work in an office full of males, she must breastfeed each one of them 5 times. Although later the fatwa was taken back, but it was given in the first place. So my question to you is that how do we know that the information that we are getting from the jurists is both reliable and practical?
First of all, I think two things are to be kept in mind. Number one, these are not infallible, so there will be mistakes. I'm not going to be directly addressing the Al-Azhar University because we do not have anyone with similar ideas or similar fatwas from the Shia or the Ja'fari school of thought. But nevertheless, you know, making a mistake is a possibility because they're not infallible. They're not the infallible imams. They are the fallible scholars who have spent a lifetime trying to become an expert. Now, they still make mistakes, and the difference of opinion indicates that there are mistakes. However, before they issue a fatwa, they would look at two different sciences, the science of hadith and the science of rijal, where they would go and search two things, the matn, the wording of the hadith, and the chain of transmission, the chain of narration. So the transmission itself, that the isnad, or these are the people who have said this hadith, are they all reliable and trustworthy? And only then they would issue a fatwa based on that, those words, and the matn, or the text itself. So if both are reliable, then they will base their understanding and their fatwa on it. Otherwise, there will be no fatwas issued on the basis of a hadith which are weak, and a hadith which are fabricated or which have been put together much later by the people who wanted to make these hadiths for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Sayyid, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show with us today. And inshallah, we pray for your continued success. It is clear that this topic can be discussed for hours. In the society in which we live, our lives have become so fast-paced that the time no longer remains for us to sit down and work out rulings for ourselves using Quran and Hadith. And Taqleed provides us that avenue and the peace of mind that was handed down to us through our infallible imams. Would you put your life on the line by asking a medical question from someone who had a keen interest in medicine? No. In fact, you would refer to an expert, the one who knew his field, the one who was an expert in the field of medicine. So similarly, when discussing Islamic concepts and Islamic problems, one should refer to the experts of Islam, not a person that may have a keen interest in a subject of Islam. Those that wish to modernize Islam in the face of an Islam that has been presented by regimes such as the Taliban, they should know that many of the concepts of the Taliban and their government were in fact alien and opposed to the teachings of Islam. Look to the true Islam and you will find that it requires no modernization. But in fact, the modern day needs to catch up with Islam. I'd like to thank you all for watching. And thank my guest, Sayyid Ali Raza Rizvi, for attending. If you have any comments or questions, then you can email us at thenewdawn@themartyr.net. Until next week, this was The New Dawn. I was your host, Nabil Awan. Allah Hafiz. Ma'assalam.
Yatim o
بازر فشیم ساکتن و سر بزیم قم رو شونه هاشون عشق چشماشون روی گونه هاشون ناله می کند از غم باباشون عشق چشماشون روی گونه هاشون ناله می کند از غم باباشون اون که شب می اومد تک و تنها روی شونش نون و خرما حالا فهمیدن که کی بوده که شبها با حال خسته می اومد با روی بسته حالا فهمیدن علی بوده
که شب می اومد تک و تنها روی شونش نون و خورما حالا فهمیدن که کی بوده
خرابه چشمای گرسنه به راه بابا از کسی به جز او غذا نمیخوام چشمای گرسنه به راه بابا از کسی به جز او غذا نمیخوام وجودش از دنیا سیرم برای بابا میمیرم همه سراغشو میگیرم خرابه ها تاریک و سرده بابا دیگه بر نمیکرده همه سراغشو میگیرم
بی وجودش از دنیا سیرن برای بابا میمیرن همه سراغشو میگیرن خرابه ها تاریک و سرده بابا دیگه بر نمیگرده همه سراغشو شده پر امید شب وصالم رسید شب شب مراده انقدر نکن گریه دختر من عشق شوق تو چشمای تر من انقدر نکن گریه دختر من عشق شوق تو چشمای تر من
ذات من میاد دنبال من، خبر داره از حال من، امشب میاد به استقبالم، به انتظارش بیدارم کنار این کوله بارم، درد دلای چندین سالم.
فاطمه میاد دنبال من، خبر داره از حال من، عشق میاد به استقبالم، به انتظارش بیدارم کنار این کوله بارم، درد دلای چندین سالم.